Without further ado, we'll work our way through the agenda. Item one on the agenda is declaration of opening and announcement of visitors. For those that are visiting this evening, if you wouldn't mind signing the visitors register, thanks very much. If we could all be upstanding, please. The town of Bassendean acknowledges the past and present traditional owners of the land on which we gather to conduct this meeting and pays its respects to their elders, both past and present. Thank you. Just a reminder to everybody that the town is committed to engaging in its community and recognises providing opportunities for the community to attend council meetings will result in more informed and engaged residents. Live streaming will commence at the times that the meetings are due to commence and finish when the presiding member closes or adjourns the meeting for any reason. Meetings closed for consideration of matters under section 5.23 of the Local Government Act or by resolution of council will not be streamed. Item 2, attendance and apologies. Mayor Councillor Renee McLennan is on a leave of absence and I'm Robert Brown. I'm acting in her stead as the Deputy Mayor. A leave of absence, apologies also from Councillor John Gangell, who can't be with us this evening because of a medical issue, minor medical issue. 3, deputations. Mr. Grant Taylor of Taylor Robinson Cheney Broderick will give a presentation on the proposed concept plan for lots 4 and 5 Morley Drive East. No?
But deputations have been cancelled.
And deputations have been cancelled, thank you. Item 4, declarations of interest. Anybody wish to declare an interest in any matters being considered or discussed tonight?
It is the last item about the Australia Day.
It's a confidential item.
It's a confidential item.
8.1.
Thank you. 8.1. I have an impartiality interest as I know one of the nominees.
Thank you very much. Councillor Quinton.
Excuse me, Councillor Brown. I should also claim an impartiality because I actually know one of the applicants in the Australia Day. The Australian Citizen of the Year or whatever? Citizen of the Year.
Thank you very much. Moving on to item 5, addresses by a member of the public. 15 minutes will be allocated for addresses by members of the public on matters contained in the agenda only. It should be noted that comments are recorded and live streamed via YouTube and that there is no protection from legal action taken against you should it arise from your comments delivered at this meeting. Do we have any addresses by members of the public? We don't, therefore we'll move on to item 6, reports. Item 6.1, Dog Local Law Review 2018. The purpose of this report is for Council to consider preparation of the new local dog laws, section 3.1.2(2) of the Act requires the person presiding at the Council meeting to give notice to the meeting of the proposed purpose and effect of the proposed local law in the prescribed manner. Is there any comments or discussion on that? I have one. I'd like to see this matter deferred simply because the state is looking at our local our state dog act. The date is late in 2019, which I'm assuming will be no more than 12 months away. And I'm assuming as a consequence of that, we will be reviewing our local dog act, even though the recommendation is that this won't take place. I'm assuming that it will. And what I'd like to do in having this matter adjourned or put aside is that obviously there's some expenditure and it is time consuming in the consultation, drafting and publication of our local dog act, and I would, considering that within 12 months we're likely to have to review it as a consequence of the state's review, I think it should be deferred for 12 months.
Can I ask the officers a question about
Certainly.
This?
Bearing in mind what I'm suggesting.
It's a briefing session, so the deferment, if there was going to be, would be next week.
Okay.
So I still was curious about, on page 5 of the report, the third last paragraph, we've got here written, one major change is the removal of designated dog prohibited and exercise areas. This is now enacted from a decision of council rather than a section of the local law as per the 2013 amendments to the Dog Act 1976. Now, first of all, I don't know what that means because there's no copy and paste of the council decision. So can someone explain that to me so that I know what it means?
Yes, through the chair. Council on a periodic basis can review does review which are on the lead area, off the lead areas. And all dogs under the Act are basically all dogs under the Act, if there's no specified areas, the dog should be on the lead, so in a public place. So council can determine on land that it manages off the lead areas.
Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Or prohibited areas. So, for example, if you have a natural area or something like that, you don't want dogs to go in at all, you can prohibit dogs from going in there as well.
Okay, so that decision of council is obviously from a couple of years ago or something.
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
And just following on from Councillor Hamilton's question, what's the process for council now reviewing on and off areas, and how does it... what's the process for
the protocol would be that, you know, that the officers can bring a report to council and outline the current off the lead areas, and council can consider those off the lead areas and determine whether they deem them to be appropriate or not, or they could add additional off the lead areas if they wished to do so.
So council would have to request a report.
The officers can bring a report to council if you so desire.
And timeline-wise,
I thought there might be some questions in this regard, so I've brought along an information sheet for councillors, which is on our Town of Bassendean website, which I can provide to councillors after the meeting as well.
That'd be great. And should council decide to proceed with going to consultation in regards to the local law, what would be the time period for consultation to take place and then a review to occur?
The advertising period is generally for a period of about 6 weeks or so. Yep. We can extend that if need be. We advertise it, we then analyse the feedback, bring a further report back to council. But in essence, once you've advertised the local law, it's a 12-month process because it has to go to the state government for their consideration and before it's gazetted.
So would it make sense in consideration of designated on and off lead areas to occur at which point after the consultation?
The local law doesn't take into consideration.
So it can be completely...
It can be done at any time that's at council's discretion.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Wilson.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I'm sensing some confusion, so just to be clear, currently dog exercise areas are defined within the Dog Act. Is that dog local law, or is that the case?
The under the Dog Act, the local government can define which are off the lead areas. All if the local government doesn't define which are off the lead areas, it's then regarded as being a public space, and the dogs have to be on lead.
Yeah, but the way that those off-lead areas are defined currently is within our local law.
It's defined by council resolution.
Okay.
Any further questions?
So I'm not following what's proposed to be different in that respect. Could you explain that further?
So the draft, it's proposed to refine our local law, to bring it up to date with the current legislation, and to so that's the expectation. As the officer's report has indicated, the current discussions that are happening in regards to dog breeders won't affect our local law, because it'll be covered under the Act.
So, if there's no overlap between the subject matter that's contained in this proposed amendment and the review that the state government's doing, there's nothing really getting in the way of us making this change now.
What's that last sentence?
There's nothing really in the way of getting in the way of us making this change now. Is there?
There's nothing in the way of. Well, I don't see there's anything in the way of council proceeding with advertising the new local law.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. No further questions? Move on to item 6.2. The amended application for 8 multiple dwellings for minor design modifications and to extend the period of validity of approval. Lot 761, number 39, Broadway, Bassendean. Applicant owner, Praetorian Proprietary Limited. The application seeks to amend a development approval that was previously granted by council at its ordinary meeting on the 28th of April 2015. The development of 8 multiple dwelling apartments while making minor design modifications and extending the period of validity for the now expired development approval. Do we have any questions from councillors?
Yes, thank you, through the chair. On page 11 of the report, it states that in essence that an approval may be extended if the development approved is substantially commenced. Has this development commenced?
Through the chair, there's been no commencement of development in this instance.
Okay, so this development was approved, looks like about 3.5 years, over 3.5 years ago. Now, with the normal approval process, has a 2-year limitation, is that about right?
Through the chair, the default period for planning approvals, as was applied to this development, is a 2-year time period, yes.
Okay. So we've gone past the 2-year period. We're out past 3.5 years since the original approval. So I'm trying to understand if, because in some instances we're talking about extending that approval, but it would seem to me that if we've gone for 3.5 years without any activity on that land, it's not really an extension anymore, is it? I'm not sure. I actually am not sure whether you would call it an extension, but it does seem to be an awfully long time between the original approval and what we're looking at again now. So is it a new application or is it an extension?
Thank you, through the chair. The application is properly an application to amend the previous approval to extend the validity of that approval, and although that might sound unusual, the Planning and Development Local Planning Scheme Regulations 2015 introduced a new allowance for people whereby applications could be made to extend the validity of approvals after those approvals had expired. So that is now a scenario that is in play that up until the introduction of those regulations did not previously exist.
With the indulgence of the chair, can I follow on with that? So if the normal time frame for an approval is about 2 years, Are we extending the timeline from when the last approval expired for another 2-year period, which would mean give them another 6 months, or are we actually, from the if we approved it now, are we giving them another 2 years from like this month now onwards?
Thank you, through the Chair. The regs essentially say that an application of this kind should be made and dealt with as if it was a new application, and the application is being dealt with on that basis, and it is recommended that a 2-year time period be granted from Council's new decision when dealing with the application.
Okay. Now, is it not correct that the town receives significantly reduced rates from a vacant land property that from unimproved value? So we've had this land vacant for 3.5 years. We're looking at giving another extension that may be another 2 years where they may or may not do the development. So there is a rates difference. If the land had been developed in the timely fashion when the first approval was given, there would certainly be a rates benefit for the town as opposed to what we're getting now. Is that correct?
Through the Chair, perhaps on behalf of Mr. Costarella, the rates for 8 apartments undoubtedly would be higher than the rates for a vacant piece of land.
Right. Any further questions? Councillor Quinn.
I was just wondering, with the review that's being undertaken with the heritage areas around Bassendean, what heritage area this area is now in, and what building characteristics are contingent on that area, and if this now complies with that current look.
Broadly, there's no defined heritage area impacting on Broadway, and I think that the design guidelines, the intention is that that will be rolled out as part of the new scheme rather than the current scheme.
Sure. My question, though, is that there are design elements that have been identified in areas. We have seen those maps. So I'm just asking, what are the design elements of that area, of that road? Have we... Mr. Dowling, I know that we've done mapping around the town. Just curious about what the design elements are for that area, and if this new design is in keeping with that design, those design elements.
Unfortunately, I don't have the maps with me tonight, so I can't actually answer that, but I can take that on notice and give you an answer in the next few days.
Yeah, great. And just the other thing about bins, we're moving to a 3-bin system, so I just wanted to know if this is a new application, whether they've taken that into account.
Thank you, through the Chair. Fortunately, with this application, the design does incorporate 2 separate bin stores, and there is sufficient capacity to incorporate additional bins into those bin stores if the town does switch across to a 3-bin system. So the arrangement that is approved is that there are 8 bins in total for the development, 4 general rubbish bins, 4 recycling bins, a shared arrangement, 1 pair of bins per 2 apartments, which is a standard arrangement. And within each of those 2 bin stores, as I say, there is actually spare capacity for 2 further bins in each to be provided if that need were to arise.
What size are the bins?
The bins that have been approved, or the design that has been approved, has been designed on the basis of 2 40-litre bins. So essentially, there's the spare capacity for the additional 1 40-litre bin that is contemplated.
Thank you.
Councillor Wilson.
Thank you. I'd offer a recommendation point 2C. it talks about in accordance with the town's adopted street tree master plan. Does anyone happen to know what tree species is specified in that location?
Thank you, through the chair. The street tree species in Broadway is jacaranda.
Okay. Thank you.
No further questions?
Oh, just one. I know we asked this question over and over again. Do we now have a policy about putting solar panels on roofs of new developments?
Thank you, through the chair. Not a specific policy that does mandate solar panels to be provided. This property is in one of the split-coded areas. With the split-coded developments that are proposed, solar panels may be one of the options that an applicant chooses to achieve the point score that is required under the energy efficient design policy, but solar panels in themselves are not mandated as such.
Okay.
Councillor Hamill.
In the officer's recommendation, point 1C, I'm just curious whether the provision of substantial tree digs in accordance with the town's adopted street tree master plan, is that at the developer's cost?
Through the chair, yes. All those landscaping requirements, including any street tree requirements, are at the applicant's cost.
We have a question that relates to condition number 14, the incorporation of public art in the proposed development, for a cash and loop payment of 1% of the construction cost. I'm assuming this would be a multi-million or $1 million development. I can make that assumption, 8 units. So our take on it, if they don't incorporate public art, we would receive a $1 million
development
cost of $10,000 cash in lieu. Would that be a mistake? 1%.
Thank you. For each $1 million, the figure is $10,000.
Okay. When is that cut in? It's obviously not for, because it's a commercial development. When does that need for public art kick in? What's the criteria?
Thank you. From recollection for residential development, the public art policy calls for that contribution for developments of this kind that have an estimated value of $1 million or more.
Okay. What form of that, what quality and quantity, is there some kind of formula that we use for people to put in public art in these developments? I'm interested. Curious.
In terms of the actual proposal that is contemplated?
So if the developer said, well, we'll deal with public art, we'll install public art, do they decide on the quality and quantity of that public art, or is it some kind of formula that we use?
Thank you. The art is subject to an approval from the town.
Yes, please. Mr. Hagan.
Just adding to that, we do have our cultural development officer here with us tonight, and Gabby is very deeply involved in that process, works with the developers to ensure that any artworks that are installed as part of the development are acceptable to the town. And so we have an iterative process with the developer to ensure a successful outcome. The developer does have some rights of say, including the form and the location, but we work closely with them to ensure a successful outcome for the community.
Yes, we're going to get more and more of these type of developments as we increase our housing stock, particularly multi-dwellings, this type of dwelling. So our take would be $10,000, or they put in public art. Interesting. Thank you very much.
So just adding to that, our preference would be for a cash-in-lieu component that would then provide a bit more flexibility for the town to develop significant artworks at key locations around the town, with the development of that reserve fund over time. The developer at this time does have the option to determine whether or not to install the artwork on their site.
Thank you.
I just have one more question. Yes. I just wanted to ask about privacy screenings. Can you just walk me through what our policy is and what leniency there is around privacy screenings? On the boundary walls?
Perhaps I might seek clarification with respect to what exactly you are referring to in terms of boundary wall.
So any neighbours at the back or on the sides who feel like because it's a double storey development that there might be some people viewing into their yards, what leniency do they have to put up some kind of privacy screen that is not just vegetation? And does that need to come to council for determination?
Okay, thank you. In terms of boundary fencing, the standard expectation and the standard requirement for boundary fencing is 1.8 metre high fencing. If a property owner is wishing to incorporate additional height fencing, that is a matter that they need to negotiate directly with their adjoining neighbours in relation to. In terms of protection of visual privacy from the upper floor of buildings, such as developments of this kind, there are controls in place under the R codes that do specify requirements in terms of window sill heights, potentially the need for fixed obscure glazing, the provision of screens to balconies and the like. So in this particular instance, a question has been raised about overlooking to the rear neighbour from the rear of the upper floor of the development, and the measures that have been incorporated into the design include fixed obscure glazed windows to 1600 mils above floor level, and also windows that have a sill height that is at least 1600 mils above floor level.
Councillor Hemel.
On page 24 of the attachment to this, is it the attachment? Yes. I'm curious because it states in our strategic objectives that we will encourage the retention of trees on development site. Now, this site appears to have been clear felled in 2014. Here we are in 2018, where there's obviously no trees, and even if it's developed, there'll be a significant time lag before there are trees. I'm trying to come to grips with how this development plays into our strategic aims, with this saying that we encourage the retention of trees on development sites, when obviously on an ongoing basis this is not happening. And I'm asking the officers if they have any thoughts on how we can keep on track with our strategic aims.
The strategic aim is to encourage, but that's all we can do. We cannot mandate the trees need to stay there.
If there are no further questions on item 6.2, we'll move to item 6.3, which I note the officer's recommendation is it matter be deferred to the December 2018 Ordinary Council to give the proponent an opportunity to respond to the comments raised in this report. On that basis, are there any questions of arising from 6.3? If there are none, we'll move to 6.4. Give vouchers for employees' years of service. Application. The purpose of this report is to address the notice of motion relating to gift vouchers provided to staff and others. Are there any questions relating to 6.4? If not, we'll move directly on to item 6.5, Old Perth Ride Vibrancy Framework. for council to consider a short-term targeted intervention to activate the west end of Old Perth Road. Do we have any questions relating to this?
I just wanted the framework's great, but I wonder what opportunities we could incorporate into the framework for elements of play and disability and access, particularly if we're wanting to make it an all abilities kind of space, then wondering what thought's been put around play and if we could provide gradients on the curbing so people in wheelchairs and prams don't have to go to the edge of the footpath to use the space.
Thank you for the question. Yes, certainly consideration to play elements has been considered within the framework. Inclusion is something, though, I've got to say that I didn't specifically put my mind to, although I did receive the email from you about International Disabilities Days and in December, and a fabulous feature that Councillor Quinton saw in Melbourne, I believe it was, a few years ago, which I thought was a fabulous little project, and I'm sure that's something that we can take up with our cafes here in Bassendean. And that would be a nice little additional project that we could add to the framework. The intention behind the framework was not to be exclusive. It was very much about a series of conversations that we had with staff over a very short period of time to garner the sorts of things that we can achieve, that we can action, not necessarily to be exclusive, but to be around the sorts of things that we can achieve. So it's certainly a living document, and we'd love to be able to add to it. So suggestions such as how we can make it an inclusive space would be much appreciated.
Councillor Allen.
I agree that this is the most positive sort of framework we've had in a while. There's a couple of points there in respect to landlord partnerships, and it's got here creates pop-up artwork in various shops by local creatives. That's fine, but could I also perhaps ask the administration to explore the potential of liaising with the landlords to have pop-up retailers given, say, a very short period of rent-free, which may encourage those retailers to stay on if they're successful. And then the other one down here in events, we've got food truck event to commence at a regular food truck event in the street. I would suggest that that may not assist those businesses where their primary income is from food preparation. I would suggest that one of the gaps in the market locally is a fresh food growers market. So perhaps if the administration might consider that instead of food trucks, which might conflict with existing businesses who are already struggling. And that's it.
Thanks, Councillor Allen. No need for comment?
No.
Sorry. Councillor Quinn.
Sorry, one last question. I just wanted to ask about power. What kind of power do we have at that end of the street for the opportunities of large screens and maybe even stages?
There is provision of three-phase power outlets available to us, and we have other outlets as well. Where we've found the requirements to exceed our capacity, we have brought in generators for the purpose.
May I just add to just addressing Councillor Quinton's comments in regards to mobility? Certainly I think the last initiative that we've identified in the framework around street infrastructure was designed to raise Old Perth Road so it would be a single level to facilitate mobility issues, people with prams, gophers, etc., and try and create more of a mall-type atmosphere, particularly when festivals and events are on.
Thank you for that. I have a
Your question. During some informal discussions with business owners and people with an interest in revitalising that area, there seemed to be some enthusiasm yet to be validated that the area to the west of Wilson Street up to Guildford Road could become a pedestrian mall. Currently we have the vast majority of the width of these of the area taken up for cars, and there's only 9 or 10 car bays, so it raises the question why cars in there at all. And it seems to lend itself to some kind of more pedestrian friendly area where you could have alfresco, you could have play areas. So in our thinking going forward with this short term fix, maybe it's something to bear in mind that whatever we do doesn't interfere with that concept that may very well come about. But there's no need for a comment unless anybody wants to. But no further questions on 6 point project.
I just had one question.
Wilson.
Thanks, Deputy Mayor. So for the elements of street art that have been considered, have staff discussed the idea of perhaps having a competition or an invitation for some of the established street artists to put forward their ideas?
At this stage, we're just coming up with our concepts, but definitely expressions of interest would be something that we would want to do. Our preference being to start locally and then go further. That's just where we're at this stage.
Okay.
But there's been a lot of informal discussions with community members sort of in the creative areas just sort of for feedback and some guidance and suggestions. So coming from that basis of involving the community from the start.
Okay. And just on sequencing, would staff wait for this resolution to be dealt with by council before talking to any of the land bankers, landowners in the town?
No, we're in constant chat with them, and our senior economic development officer, in fact, has been meeting today.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Thanks. If there are no further questions, we'll move on to item 6.6, Town Ambassador in Access and Inclusion Plan 2018. Council requested to endorse for public comment a new draft Access and Inclusion Plan, AIP, for the town. Any questions in relation to 6.6, Councillor Quinton?
I had an incident on the weekend that I just wanted to clarify, where I know this is out of standing orders, but I just want to give some context. I went down to the Bassendean Oval on the weekend, and a man in a wheelchair was unable to access through the turnstile gates, and the gates were locked. So I have had a response from the staff today about that, and my question is around specifically speaking to event organisers and having that specifically dictated into the access and inclusion plan, and if it can be a working document that just because you need to provide one entrance, that an oval is a large space and just having one entrance for people with disability is kind of counterproductive to a whole access and inclusion plan. So I'm just wondering what thinking has been put around making sure that if someone does need access to our grounds and facilities, that it is all inclusive, and if there is some kind of public document that event and organisers are sent, what's the process?
Indeed, we've had discussions in-house today around that exact subject as well. And we're currently building a guideline for event organisers. We do have one already, but we're redoing it. And we're looking to beef up consideration to inclusiveness within that. We're also looking to incorporate some text on the application form itself that seeks feedback where barriers to inclusion are identified by hirers so that we can address them independently of the hire. So thank you for that heads up over the weekend, and it has generated some action.
I just want to clarify something. On page 37 of the agenda, it states that funding to achieve the revised plan was allocated in 2018-19. However, I believe that the original $20,000 was allocated in 2017-18, but the plan was not produced. I think the plan actually expired in early 2017 or something like that. So we had a very long lag between the production of this plan. Was there any particular reason for that?
I think the main reason was sequencing of staff leave and absence. I was away for probably 6 months of the last year through illness and other reasons. And I think that was a major reason why a number of, a couple of strategic processes were not actioned at the time.
Okay, and following on from that, in the communication engagement, it says that the consultants' report, they engaged with the mayor and elected members of the town. I'd just like it noted that I had no engagement whatsoever with this. So,
okay. So there was a workshop conducted with the councillors. Not all councillors were in attendance. I acknowledge that.
Do we have any further questions regarding item 6.6? If not, we'll move on to item 6.7, working groups draft terms of reference. The purpose of this report is for council to consider the draft term of reference for the Access and Inclusion Working Group and the Suicide Prevention Working Group. Do we have any questions in relation to this, Councillor Wichter?
Through the chair, just in regards to terms of reference for the Suicide Prevention Working Group, would it be possible to consider, I know at the moment it says one appointed councillor, something to the effect of a minimum of one, just to allow the opportunity, should there be interest of more than one and an ability to contribute in that space, that it might be possible?
Yes, absolutely, Councillor.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for that. Councillor Hamilton.
And if I could go reverse to that, given staff time is so valuable, it says staff plural in there somewhere, I would suggest that maybe with a working group we should try and keep the staffing to a minimum, because you are spread across quite a few committees at the moment. So if that can happen, that's great. If it can't, then so be it. Also, on the in the draft terms of reference, at the bottom of page 1 for the Access and Inclusion Working Group, I note that the second last dot point is to prepare for council an access and inclusion plan to ensure that people with disability have the same level of access to council facilities. This is something that we've just dealt with in the previous. So I'm not sure, I would not see that as being necessary in the terms of reference for that group.
Yes, I acknowledge that, Councillor. Can I say that you just caught me out with the cut and paste from the from the terms of reference that we did have from the Access and Inclusion Committee that the working group will replace.
Okay.
If there are no further questions on item 6.7, we'll move on to item 6.8. Town of Bass has been draft arts and cultural plan for 2019-2023. The purpose of this report is for the council to receive the Town of Bassendean draft arts and cultural plan 2019-2023 and advertise the plan for public comment. Do we have any questions on this item? Councillor Hamilton?
On page 43 of the agenda, may I suggest for accuracy a slight amendment halfway down? It's got, in undertaking this process, the town conducted an extensive period of engagement targeting all members of the community. I would suggest that maybe all is perhaps a bit of an exaggeration, targeting members of the community, I would delete probably all, just to be accurate.
Noted. So no further questions on 6.8, we'll move on to 6.9. Consideration of meeting dates and citizenship ceremonies for 2019. Council is requested to endorse its 2019 meeting dates for council and committees and citizenship ceremonies. I note that we don't have a meeting, ordinary council meeting scheduled for January.
That's correct.
That's correct.
That's correct. And that's obviously a preference for council. At the moment, it's not included, and that's not to suggest that we won't have workshops or strategy sessions, particularly with the budget coming up, and an opportunity to perhaps recalibrate the 2019 year. So I've been discussing with the administration some opportunities to certainly do things a little bit differently in 2019. So some of the opportunities we've been talking about is providing council papers to you earlier than the three-day sort of minimum requirement that's set out in the Act at the moment, the possibility of some strategy sessions rather than lots of workshops. So trying to sort of manage your time a little bit easier and make the load in 2019 hopefully a little bit easier on your time and effort. So certainly January is a possibility if you would like a formal meeting at that time.
Are there any questions to Councillor Hamilton?
Just with that one, I do know that previous councils did delete the January meeting. However, it was reintroduced, the January meeting, principally because there was such a time lag and the workload in the February meeting became too huge. So I'm not sure how other councillors feel about this, but I would suspect that maybe deleting the January OCM might be put too much workload into February. I do have something else as well. The Audit and Governance Committee, I note that in October, me personally, I end up with three committee meetings in 20 hours, Audit and Governance, Sustainability and Town Assets. I also note that with Audit and Governance, we tend to, in the terms of reference, it's written that we will have the meetings every 3 months. So obviously that creates a timeline which is more than 3 months between the end of the financial, the end of the year and the following year. So I would ask if perhaps we could look at those dates and see that 9th of October and see what can happen there.
Any further questions?
Maybe just a comment, if you'll permit. Just in regards to the January meeting, I would say that it would be great to have an opportunity to recalibrate, and now that Councillor Hamilton's mentioned that February can get a bit heavy, that would be factored into, you know, what appears on the agenda. So
certainly.
Yeah.
One option, too, to consider is, depending upon the workload, I'm hoping to sort of forecast a forward-looking agenda so we've got an opportunity of where things may fall through the year to get a little bit of an idea of when things are likely to come up to council. But if there is a load in January, we could have a special meeting. So I'm not sure whether you want to keep it open at this stage or you would prefer to lock down a January meeting. That's an option for you to consider.
If I may, I support a hiatus during January. It gives the officers an opportunity to recalibrate or reset for the coming year. As the CEO said, we could be a little more strategic about that workload coming up for February. But the amount of effort that goes into preparing for the briefings and OCMs And bear in mind, we're still recovering from that first 2 or 3 weeks where people take annual leave. Now, I think it might be a better proposition to perhaps bring the February meeting a week or so forward. That might be the option, but I'm certainly in agreement with having no January ACM, but if we need to have meetings, we can. Are there any further questions on item 6.9? If there's none, we'll move on to item 6.10, conducting the 2019 council elections by postal vote. I have one question on the officer's recommendation 3, an amount of $50,000 to be listed for consideration in the 2019-20 budget. Hold the 2019 audit elections. What was the actual cost of the election contribution on 2017? Yes.
I'll get that information for you. I don't have it. I think we actually got quoted $46,000. Okay. I think it actually came in a little bit under that, but I can get the actual amount.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. Are there any further questions? Any questions on 6.10, Councillor Hamilton.
I'm assuming that going with postal voting, it's still the same as 2017. There'd be booth voting on the polling day as well. That'd be correct, yes. And also I note that there is, in the timeline in the attachments, there's a caretaker period commences 12th of September through to 19th of October. Is this from the motion that was moved by our Mayor many, many months ago to have a caretaker period? That's okay, that's fine.
No further questions. We'll move on to item 6.11, Auditor General's report on local government procurement. Council's requested to note the findings of the Auditor General's report on local government procurement as it relates to the town of Bassendean. We have questions on this item. Councillor Hamilton.
Okay, so confirming the areas of weakness that were identified in the town, it looks like raising and approving purchase orders was the most identified issue. Would that be correct, Mr. Osorio?
There was one issue of purchase order raised where the Auditor-General believed that the officer had exceeded his authority, but in fact the officer was acting in the high position he was acting in as a director position, but the list that they got just showed that he'd only had X amount of dollars. Is that the one you're referring to?
I'm just looking at the graph. The next section they've got is we had some weaknesses in reviewing invoices and payments.
I think the report that was provided is the one that was tabled in Parliament. There is a specific one for the town of Bassendean that I think all the items under that thing is what we're working towards, and as the CEO says, we'll refer that matter to council in the third quarter.
Okay. I'm only reading what's in the attachments.
Can't elaborate on that because it's
okay. I note in the officer's recommendation, I note that the Auditor General's investigation did not review if procurement decisions attained the best value for money or outcomes for the local government communities. So may I inquire if the proposed review by this administration will extend to value for money benchmarks? Okay.
Yes, we are. I guess as part of the purchasing policy review, there will be some comments in there about that, for sure.
Also, normally, I think I've already spoken to the CEO about this, so I won't worry about that question.
Thank you. If there are no further questions, we'll move on to item 6.12, Audit and Governance Committee meeting held on 7th of November 2018. The purpose of this report was for Council to receive the report on a meeting of the Audit and Governance Committee held on 7th of November 2018 and adopt the following recommendations. Are there any questions on this item, please? Councillor Hamilton? Councillor Quinton?
I noticed in the report that you did a drive-through inspection of the church, place of worship, what are we calling it? What does that mean? Did you actually go inside and have a look?
A couple of years ago, yes, there was an inspection of the property because the property originally was a function centre. It was purchased by the church for a church. We brought it to the audit committee last year and as well as this year to ensure that the church was still a church. I think one of the committee members suggested that we needed to make sure that the property was planning use was for a place of worship, which we've now found out it is. I didn't know that maybe at that point, but we didn't drive through it. We did go to the property.
And you went inside?
Councillor
Hamilton?
That's it.
I'm a little bit confused here because I do note down the bottom of page 58 that the information council has the property changed its use from reception centre to place of worship in September 2014. However, in the audit and governance meeting, I have here the comments section which said the manager of corporate services and the senior rates officer visited the property in August 2016 to seek clarification of the activities that were currently being undertaken on the property. Met with the chairman, explained that its initial protected part of use of the property being a reception cafe, that would not be realised. The property was solely to be used for a place of worship. At this stage, the original concept was not to be progressed. Then it's got council may decide to provide a full rates exemption or reject the application, but given the nature of the activities as described by the applicant, that being primarily as a place of worship and normal activities of a Baptist church, planning approval was given as a place of worship and a function centre. So the Audit and Governance Committee agenda has that it was given approval as a place of worship and a function centre, and in this agenda we've got here that it was permitted use was just as a place of worship, so I'm confused. Can somebody tell me what the permitted use is for that property?
I suppose we, as a planner, need to take that question on notice and alter the agenda that goes to council if required.
Okay.
Thanks for highlighting that, Councillor Hamilton. Okay. Are there any further questions on that agenda item? If not, we'll move on to item 6.13. Determinations made by the Principal Building Surveyor. Are there any questions in relation to that? Good night.
Good night. Good night.
Are there any questions related to that? Councillor Hamilton?
This is my curiosity. So we've obviously got quite a few demolitions in this, and so with all these house demolition approvals, is there any facility available to council for encouraging tree retention on these blocks rather than clear felling the sites? No.
Only through an individual tree preservation order, which is probably impractical for us to serve a tree preservation order each time a house is demolished.
Just an additional question there. When they have a demolition order or demolition approval, Do they have to follow up in a timely fashion with a development application or not really?
No.
Okay.
Councillor Mikichuk?
Yeah, through the Chair, I just want to ask whether either by council resolution or some sort of administrative tool, is there an ability to, I don't know, look at some policy levers rather than some incentives to try and get that outcome? And maybe not on an individual basis, something that we can apply more broadly.
Just by clarification, get the outcome as in preserving more trees?
Yeah.
Do we have an answer? Somebody respond to that?
Shall we take that on notice?
Yeah, because I guess Councillor Hamilton's really looking for opportunities to have policy levers around tree preservation, so I'm guessing outside of this meeting maybe there's some exploration there.
I'll have a little bit of a shot at it. Council has considered a urban forest strategy which looked at both the public realm and the private realm, and as part of that strategy there was some consideration given to the private realm and we have actually undertaken an aerial audit of where the tree canopy is within the town, and I believe that as part of the Tony's work that he's doing, that he's looking at that for the long term in regards to potential opportunities to identify where those high profile areas are, where the trees are, and seeing how we can look at strategies to either offset or to build into the retention of some of those larger trees.
But part of the densities of building
form. Yes, the built form. So, but there's some way to go in regards to that.
If I can just clarify, the line of my questioning is twofold here, because obviously for some of these items that we've got on the agenda, we can see that there is demolition and clear felling on lots, which leads to us as a council achieving a lower rates return on those properties, sometimes for a very long period of time, years at a time. But on top of that, we're losing tree canopy as well. And yes, with a development application, there's landscaping requirements and what have you, but if there's a significant gap between when these properties are clear felled and when the development eventually happens, some 5-6 years later, then we're A, losing rates income, and B, we're losing tree canopy. So I guess what I'm asking the staff is, can we perhaps have some investigation of various ways that we might be able to attack these problems?
If I could make a comment. Obviously, with developers such as the one we were discussing tonight, from their point of view, it is less problematic if the whole block is just clear felled. And yet, we will incentivise them to put in public art to the value, or we'll take $10,000 off them. Maybe it could be modified to be public art and tree retention, because there are obviously opportunities within these developments to retain some of the trees around the boundary if they're suitable. It really does need some consideration that we can incentivise developers in particular to retain trees. When I did my property, I retained trees as a priority. So there might be something in there. If we can incentivise them to build public art, we can incentivise them to we can identify a tree that maybe could be kept. It is something to consider. If there are no more questions?
Yes.
Yes, there are.
I don't think I've ever seen this before. The subdivision application, what does statutory advice mean?
It means after we give advice to the Western Australia Planning Commission, we're the determining authorities for subdivision. So we aren't making a decision, we're just giving advice.
Okay. Do we see concept plans for those before they go? Okay.
No. Generally, I didn't miss this.
Sorry?
If a subdivision application complies with the provisions of the scheme, whether it be residential or commercial, and then complies with the scheme, we would give advice. If we've got an application that is looking to significantly vary scheme or ARCO requirements, we would either recommend refusal or bring it to council, but more often than not deal with it administratively.
Thank you.
Okay.
A retaining tree could be considered as precious as public art. There's some lateral thinking used in there. If there's no... Yes, Councillor Hamilton, you have no further question?
I do have one question that I forgot to ask about 613. In the financial attachments, I noted that the very last page that was on the financial documents that were given to Order and Governance, which was titled Financial Analytical Review, Income and Expenses, and it was an explanation of material variations, that's actually not included in the attachment for this briefing session. So I was wondering where that might be.
Are we talking about the audit one?
Well, it was attached to the financial documents that were in the Audit and Governance meeting. Now we have in these attachments it's the annual financial figures, but I actually can't see that in these documents. Oh, we can talk about it afterwards. It's missing. It's from... It's a variation, the variance.
We left that out on purpose because it was just a report to the audit committee, but...
I was just curious, that's all. Right. I assumed, because it was in the audit and governance, that it would be...
Can be.
Okay.
It's not a... Yeah.
Thanks very much for that. If there's no further questions on that item, we'll move on to item 6.14. Determinations made by Development Services. The Manager of Development Services made the following planning decision under delegated authority since those reported to the last council meeting. Do you have any questions regarding item 6.14? If not, we'll move directly on to item 7, motions of which previous notice has been given. And the following notice of motions have been listed to be considered at the meeting. Councillor Quinn?
Is the Bassendean Coal, where Coles is, not called Bassendean Village?
No. Sorry?
No, they've dropped village from the title.
Right. Okay.
Look.
It's now called Hawaiian Bassendean.
Okay.
Officially.
The public garden that they promised to install.
Do you have a question, Councillor Wilson?
No, just not observations.
So, no further questions on item 7. We'll move to confidential business at item 8. And it should be noted that the audio live stream will be confidential items are being discussed.